This podcast is brought to you by Medical Plastics News, the leading voice in polymer innovation for the medical sector. To read more and to subscribe, visit medicalplasticsnews.com. Hello and welcome to the MedTalk podcast, where we discuss the latest news and issues in life sciences. I'm Olivia Freit, the editor of Medical Plastics News, and I'm joined by Renee Bailey, the senior manager of Human Factors Engineering at Blackhagen, to talk about the importance of and how to address the potential challenges of designing instructional materials. So Renee, how does Blackhagen prioritise the inclusion of instructional design in the product development process?
It's of equal importance to the rest of the user interface. This instructional interface, whatever that may be, is optimized just as any other part of the user interface would be optimized. And it's, material that users will be interacting with and really does require the same due diligence as other aspects of the user interface that are being developed for use as part of the overall device and user interface. And I will say that we are rarely the representative end user of these instructional interfaces. We are tasked with developing them, creating them, but we do need the representative end users to weigh in on how they're interpreting and interacting with those instructional interfaces, whatever those may be. But I can tell you that instructional materials are not really a substitute for poorly designed or non-intuitive types of user interfaces. So they're really not the place for catching all of the issues that may exist with the design, where the design may be able to be optimized and make something a little easier to do rather than trying to communicate that through an instruction.
Okay, and you did say that you've got to work alongside like other representatives as well. Like how important would you say like the relationships are? Like how would you go about finding the people that you would work alongside?
Stakeholders are a tremendous contribution to instructional materials. So you have the voice of the customer information that you may used to inform you about characteristics of the representative end users and all of the different types of users you may be addressing with the instructional materials. Risk management is also a stakeholder because through risk management, we're uncovering information for safety that may need to be included in the instructional materials. And then, of course, your human factors team and running human factors evaluations that include the instructional materials so that you can optimize them based on information and data from representative end users and those kinds of evaluations.
Okay, and can you share any examples of where the effectiveness of instructions was limited by shortcomings in the device design, and how would you address any potential challenges?
Yeah, there have been a few times where we've really struggled to optimize instructions because the user interface wasn't as optimized as it could be for the representative end users. One in particular stands out where a device had been developed for a particular user group and was considered to be a device that a different user group could administer medication with. Unfortunately, the characteristics were so different between the two different user groups. They were both lay user patient user groups, but the differences in their physical and cognitive capabilities were so different, and the limitations that one of the user groups had that the other did not really prevented us from being able to optimize the instructions to the extent that the device was easier to use. The device itself posed some issues, and its design posed some issues with older users who had comorbidities, they had age-related conditions related to their vision. I can't change how an older person, I can't help them see better, honestly. And so some of that was very visual, and the feedback that the device was providing to those older users wasn't something that was coming across to them. And we really couldn't make the instructions kind of fix that problem.
So when something like that would happen, can you tailor instructional interfaces to fit a client's preference?
So for representative end users, it's so incredibly important to really understand who will be interacting with instructional materials and what kinds of environments they're going to be possibly using those instructions in. Of course, we think about healthcare providers or healthcare professionals who may be in clinical or hospital settings, but then you have some more challenging environments like in an ambulance or in an emergency department versus something that's a little more controlled, like a clinic or an OR. With lay user patients and caregivers, you're talking about home use, you're talking about potentially taking medication to their work environment or public spaces. Could they potentially travel with the device? Does traveling through like air travel, does that impact how the device operates in any way? Things like that become more part of design considerations, both in the overall footprint and the design of the physical set of instructions that someone may have, or even considering how they might access electronic instructions if that's the case. So there are so many different ways of designing instructions to fit in those different environments and be really useful. Having someone sitting in their car trying to use a device to deliver medication and unfold a huge poster of instructions may be quite daunting for them or difficult to use compared to having something that's maybe a little more portable and folded up and contributes to them taking them with them to use their medication.
And are there any challenges when updating instructions post-market?
There can be challenges to updating instructions post-market. I think something that I see quite often is the instructions are the first place companies want to go because it's easier to update instructions than modify your device and potentially open yourself up to other activities related to manufacturing, packaging, and retesting your modified device. And that's not necessarily a first choice. And if you can update the instructions and it makes sense to, and that's the only interface that you're worried about validating, that can be an easier thing. It's not always effective. And sometimes you can end up with so much additional information that's been added to instructions over time. Your instructions now have become burdened with all of this additional information. And that can be a real challenge to sift through what, you know, how can we optimize these instructions to be more usable by our representative end users rather than, you know, having all of this added information kind of added in over time.
And how do companies balance the need for updates with the constraints of modifying the device design?
I think that's a business decision for product teams and how much they want to invest in. Often they may just decide to move ahead with a device that's going to be a continuation of a product line instead of trying to go back and add to instructions when they know it's a design issue and maybe they should modify the device design. But as I was saying earlier, that's really a more of a product and business decision that they make, and whether or not the a change to the instructions is really effective, or if there's a bigger problem where they really need to investigate modifying the device and retesting and submitting that through whatever regulatory pathway they're on.
This episode of the MedTalk podcast is brought to you by MedTech Innovation Expo, the UK and Ireland's leading event for medical device manufacturing. Save the date for MedTech Innovation Expo 2024, taking place on the 5th and 6th of June at the NEC in Birmingham. For more information, please visit www.medtechexpo.com.
What role would you say human factors engineering play in the design and development of the instructional materials?
Human factors engineering, to me, plays a huge role in optimizing instructions for use or any type of instructional material that users are relying on. Through human factors evaluations, you're really uncovering areas you can optimize and make more effective for the end user. You're also, at the same time, gathering that data and evidence that you need for regulatory submissions to show that that part of the user interface has been optimized, just as you would collect information in human factors evaluations regarding the device use itself. There are aspects of using the instructions and making sure that users understand that information for safety, especially, that become a part of the human factors evaluations.
Given the global regulatory landscape and advancements with EIFUs and software, how do these advancements impact the design and development of instructional materials?
I think the inclusion of EIFUs is kind of, it's emerging. For some companies and devices, it may be more straightforward. I think there are different global regions who are moving to EIFUs only for healthcare professionals, for example. So it is a consideration. I think the European Commission also has a great list of considerations companies may want to go through. It's very explicit, it's very comprehensive, and it really causes you to think about different aspects of weighing out the pros and cons of using electronic versions of instructions rather than paper-based, and the accessibility of those electronic instructions, the reliability of that accessibility with internet and power. There are just so many different considerations you may have, and whether it actually fits the needs of those particular users. Healthcare professionals are probably in a better environment to access those kinds of materials, whereas lay users and patients and caregivers, they may differ in how they access electronic types of information. And so older users of technology aren't necessarily all that adept at finding a website and getting to the instructions and pulling those up, and may struggle with technology to do that, whereas healthcare professionals may be in a setting where they're more accustomed to that, or they're more accustomed, or their reliability of accessing that information is higher.
And when designing instructional materials, how do you balance functional success with aesthetic considerations, and what examples of aesthetic considerations would you have to factor?
To me, there can be an overuse of aesthetics to the extent that the functional aspects of the instructions are not as good as they should be for representative end users. I had a situation where I was doing an expert review, and it was a fairly lengthy user manual. It was an implantable device. It had very high risks associated with it. And the warnings for the healthcare professionals had been neatly grouped together in a, pretty bordered page to kind of try to call attention to them, but they were at the end of all of the use steps. And so it was possible for someone to go reference the use steps and do all of the use steps without seeing any of the information for safety and the warnings and cautions that were all grouped together and formatted. So they had these beautiful, neatly formatted pages that really followed their branding guidelines. But from a use perspective, how likely is it that the user may have encountered something while they were following those steps, but then they never saw the information for safety until they got to the very end of the section or chapter. There are other methods that I've seen employed for aesthetics where branding and color and things like that kind of take over and can be a distraction when users are trying to follow the instructions or really pay attention to information that should be important, but maybe there are other elements. I've seen pages with kind of overuse of formatting and that type of thing, and it's been a real distraction for the end user to focus on what was really important about the device use because there were so many things calling for their attention, whether it's an electronic page or a physical printed page. The same thing can happen. So I think aesthetics play a part, branding plays a part, but it can't be the only focus. You do have to balance it with that functional aspect so that users are really able to focus on those things that are necessary to correctly use a device.
And how would you approach the testing of instructional materials?
My mantra is always to start early. As soon as you have prototypes, you can start implementing low fidelity instructions. They can be in basic word processing like Microsoft Word. You don't have to be fancy. I think that encourages more open and honest feedback from representative end users because they see it's in development. They may be more open with feedback using those lower fidelity types of instructions. You can pick up on what may be working, what may not be working for the representative end users. There may be terminology. I had some healthcare professionals, they were surgeons and surgical teams, and there was an engineering term thrown into the mix in the instructions, and they were supposed to fill some fluid to a particular point in a container. And they're like, what is this word? I don't know what that is. I think I'm just going to fill it to here. So you find out through those early iterations, is your terminology working for them? Are you using phrases that mean something to the end user or are they confusing? And you can start to modify your instructions right alongside your device design and make sure that you're staying in tune with what things mean to end users and how you might be able to optimize that. So it's very understandable and easy to follow.
And I know that you said it doesn't have to be anything fancy, but are there any specific methodologies that you follow? Either you specifically or Black Hagen in general?
Yeah. So I like to start with a Word document, a simple Word document, the images that may accompany the text when you're talking about steps of use. Basically laying it out in a really basic format and testing it. As you move along, you may want to start integrating your layout design. Once you feel like you have your content and your graphics or illustrations, whatever elements you're including in your instructions, once you've gotten those to a certain point, now you may want to start introducing, well, if we put it in a layout like this, or we put it in a layout like that, or even if they're electronic, what are the displays that users are accessing your instructions on? And does the size of the display with the format of your instructions work for them? So start investigating those things through your human factors testing and implementing them. You can combine simulated use testing in human factors with the device, as well as testing your instructions. You don't have to have necessarily separate studies all the time just to evaluate the instructional materials. You can have different scenarios in your human factors evaluations where you may have them using the device, but then you may have them using the device alongside the instructions to really hone in on, are instructions contributing to any use issues? are the instructions clear and we're getting correct performance? I'm a performance-based professional, so performance to me is extremely important when it comes to designing and developing and iterating instructions, because you want them to, at the end of the day and at the end of your program, when you're doing a human factors summative or validation study, you don't want that to be the first time you're noticing there's a problem with the instructions. You really want to be iterating those alongside your user interface for the device and making sure that they're contributing to that correct performance.
Okay, Renee, that's all the questions that I have. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. It's an exciting topic for me to talk about, so I'm glad that someone had the interest.
Of course. Thank you.